You're listening to Butchertown Rundown, a Racing Louisville podcast and the official podcast of the Lavender Legion.
Welcome to the Butchertown Rundown, a podcast about the only top-tier professional sports team in the Commonwealth of Kentucky, Racing Louisville Football Club. Racing coming off a scintillating come-from-behind win against the Orlando Pride. Final score 3-2. 3 + 2 = 5. Playoff hopes are still alive. Becky Morgan, how you feeling?
Like, I've been through the ringer. I mean, that that game was the lowest of lows and the highest of highs. And I don't know, I think I felt it was like a spiritual experience where I felt every feeling a human being can possibly feel, from despair to ecstasy, all in 90 minutes.
Whiteside, I think technically it was 90 plus, what was it, 10 at the end of the first half, 10 at the end of the second half, but a lifetime, like, in years. What'd you think?
I mean, I don't know if anyone can hear this, but like, my voice is still, it's kind of shot, because I don't think I have screamed so much at a racing game, like, ever, because they've never done that before. They've never come from behind to win a game like that. And so I just went through all of the emotions, just like you guys, and lost my voice in the process. And, you know, it was 100% worth it. So would do it again.
Would do it again. We have so much to talk about this game. Let us not dilly-dally on this podcast. Let's get it going. Becky, we always get started with the starting line. What's going on in the standings right now?
Chaos. Just complete and utter chaos. I mean, it seems like every result is specifically designed just to raise the stakes even further. I mean, this year has been insane. First of all, this is the first year that every team has gotten over 20 points. But from the top of the standings to the bottom of the standings, the Chicago Red Stars have 24 at the bottom, and the Portland Thorns have 35 at the top. That's only 11 points between 12 teams.
That's wild.
That's absolutely wild. And as a result, Racing is now with 27 points, which is the best they've ever done. And they have six wins, which is more wins than they've ever had before. They're only in eighth place. And they're only 1 point behind the Orlando Pride, 2 points behind OL Reign, and then only 3 points behind the North Carolina Courage, New Jersey, New York Gotham, and the Washington Spirit. So depending on how Houston and Angel City goes, which is happening right now, we want a draw, because that would keep them both behind us in the standings. Racing has the potential to end the season in anywhere from 4th to 11th place with one game left.
Oh.
I mean, that's absurd.
Becky, we're laughing, because if we don't laugh, we're going to cry. Because this is just...
But I mean, it's unlikely that we will finish in fourth place. I do think that we are still truly fighting for that sixth spot. OL Reign did us a real solid by having a 0-0 draw with the Washington Spirit. I guess they both did us a big solid, because that keeps OL Reign at 29 and Washington Spirit at 30. So if they were to lose their next game and we were to win, we would be up there in the playoffs, as long as, I mean, I guess Orlando Pride could win and we could both go up there. I don't know. I haven't quite figured everything out. It's just so chaotic. I guess if Houston wins or Angel City wins and then they win their second game, they could also beat us. I mean, there's a lot. We have to win our next game. If we're going to keep our playoff hopes alive, we absolutely have to win. But a win will not guarantee us a clinch spot. We have to win, and then other things have to happen. So, I mean, it's not that clean. I don't want to be negative, but I think our chances are fairly slim, but our chances are still alive. Only two teams have been eliminated so far. If Angel City loses, they're eliminated, but they might not. I mean, who knows? It's exciting that Racing is still in the running, only, you know, to the very last game, to decision day. We haven't been eliminated. We're still alive. It's a good time to be a Racing fan.
It's a good time to be a racing fan. And even though the odds are slim every week, I send $2 to a dude in my office who buys a Powerball ticket. We all dream and fantasize that we're going to win the Powerball together, buy a racehorse. We're going to name it Mass Resignation. The hope lives. Yeah, because we're all quitting. The second that that Powerball hits, we're all quitting. There's so many things. I feel if I have one regret, Becky, it's that when we started talking about this podcast a couple years ago, you and I had said, do we need to get a mathematician? Do we need to get a statistician on board? Do we need to like contract with somebody with a, and we chose not to. And today that's coming back to haunt us because if
I don't think we would be able to afford them even if we did have them, because I think going into this weekend there were 729 different scenarios that could have happened still. So like, yeah, not just for racing, for everything in the league. But it's just, I mean, it's chaos. I mean, it's exciting. It's fun. I asked Temby at the end of the last game, you know, is it exciting being in this kind of rush when everything's jammed together? And she said, no, it's fun. The reason that she wants to play in the NWSL and the reason she thinks it's the best league is because there's so much parity. But this is like parity on steroids. But I mean, it's fun. It's fun. I mean, the fact that racing is still in it, the fact that, you know, we've had some big ups, some big downs this season, but I mean, we can be really proud of the fact that, you know, they have pulled it to the very, very end of the season.
Well, we're going to have our official commercial break here in just a quick second, but an unofficial commercial break. Caitlin, Becky, for our listeners, are there any social media accounts that they should follow, anybody that they should listen to or take a look at when they listen to this to get a likely if then that list of who they should be cheering for this weekend? I know that, you know, there's been some speculative things put in the racing Facebook page and on the racing Slack from Alan Spade. Thanks, Alan. But is there anyone else that you think is a good bet to put something together for racing fans to know who to cheer for on decision day?
Yes. So there are a decent number of people who have been trying to do scenarios across the entire league. I do think that Equalizer has a good chance of putting something out. Dan Lauletta, who's one of the editors, I know has been talking about this. He does a lot of these stats, tracks a lot of these milestones. And so he said he might write an article for Equalizer. Allison Gale on Twitter at the letter A, G-A-L-E 137. She's a data visualization specialist. He's also just a women's soccer fan. So she's been tweeting at a lot of people who've been tweeting at statistics. She's been doing her own and tracking elimination scenarios and clinching scenarios. So I've found her account very useful. NWSL has been releasing stuff. So really, there's a lot of people who are kind of doing this. I don't know of anybody that's doing it specifically for racing. If I have the time, I will try and do it just for racing, but this is just a jam-packed week for me. But keep an eye out on these various accounts, because I think that there's going to be a lot of talk, because this is just so unprecedented.
Yeah, and I think the issue with like there not being like a centralized you know list of all these outcomes is that it changes literally every day with every game result. So like, you know, we could say something right now, but it's literally like halfway through the Angel City Houston game, and by the end we could be saying something completely different. The scenarios could be completely different. So, you know, it's just everything's changing so fast. But yeah, Becky named some really good ones. I was also going to say a friend of the pod, Taylor Vincent, for, you know, just all around good photos, good quotes, good recaps, all that stuff.
Excellent. Excellent recommendations. I'll be following all of those. And now to our official commercial break, where we want to shout out once again the Lavender Legion, who has been so much fun, such a supportive group of the team. There was an event, because I know that a lot of us, myself included, say, I want to be a member of the Lavender Legion. I like the mission. I like what they're doing, but I'm out of state, or maybe I don't feel like standing on a platform with a megaphone. How can I impact the team? Why is it worth being a member? And Becky, and especially you, Caitlin, you were involved in a Lavender Legion activity that was open to all the Lavender Legion members. That is the sort of thing that the Lavender Legion does, but doesn't get a ton of publicity, doesn't get a ton of notice. For those folks that may not be members of the Lavender Legion, what did y'all do this past game?
Yeah, so after the game, the Legion met up in the Fifth Third Club, kind of right outside where the players' locker room is. And everyone, it was kind of like a secret Santa, not really secret Santa, but like every, not everyone, but if you wanted to participate, you were assigned a player and a coaching staff member, and given a limit of like, I think it was like 20-30 bucks, and you could get them a present, and then the Legion presented those gifts to the players and the coaches in the Fifth Third Club. And we also had them go out and sign the Go Big Perp banner. If anyone's seen that, it's the really big one that hangs on the capo stand, and Legion members could sign it, the players signed it. And yeah, it was, I didn't get there till late because Becky and I were doing media, but there was a good crowd in there from what I could see. And yeah, I think the players got some really good gifts, really thoughtful stuff. And I saw that Kim actually got some cufflinks. Did anyone else see that? He posted about them and he really enjoyed those. So
yeah, handmade flirtily cufflinks. Yeah.
Yeah, so it was good to kind of show our appreciation to the players and get to tell them directly, you know, how much we appreciate what they're doing and how big of fans we are. So,
yeah, it was really fun. I mean, for the most part, we didn't catch everybody, but you know, the players would come down the concourse, come in, and then they'd be handed their gift and they would stand and talk for a little bit. So, I mean, it wasn't anything like, oh, you know, some like big gathering or anything like that, but it was fun. We all got to see each other for once, you know, all the Legion members, and really chat. And Bridget Moon Dragon also made these great pennants that had, they were fleur-de-lis shaped, and then they had little gems on them that were purple and mint colored. And they were for special occasions. So like Carson hitting 10,000 minutes, I think, was one of them. Katie Lund hitting 50 games. And so, you know, she was able to hand them directly to the players, and they were like so wowed and so appreciative of their, you know, they were handmade. So just seeing interactions like that, you know, was fun. I know that Robin Pryor got a
Tumblr.
Tumblr, thank you. A Tumblr that had goldfish on it for Ari, and she posted it on on Instagram, said proud mom because of her goldfish. So like, you know, people had fun with it, and I think the players really, really appreciated it.
Cool stuff like that is just, I don't want to say it happens every day in the Legion, but it does happen. And we're coming up on the end of this season, be it happening shortly or a little bit longer, that if you're listening to this and you're not a member of the Lavender Legion, please join us. It's a lot of fun. We enjoy it. We have good times. And it's
only $5.
It's only, well, $5 and 2 cents.
Oh, you know, it's $5 and 2 cents.
Just pay the $5. Yeah, I don't know if you're not accepted. But really, I mean, I joke. It's a lot of fun. It's good people. It is, if you are on, and I'm going to, you know, joke, but if you're on your phone and you click on Facebook, oh man, that's horrible. Click off. Click on Twitter, X. Oh my God, that's awful. That's no good. Email, well, all I'm doing is getting spam messages and work messages. That's horrible. It is always good to go on the Lavender Legion Slack. It's just a bunch of racing fans. We're all having fun. And we would really love for you to join us. It's a lot of fun. That's all I've got.
Great place to talk about those scenarios. I mean, we should have said, if you want to hear all the different talk about what could happen to racing, I mean, we're breaking it down in the Legion Slack.
You bet. 90% of the stuff in the Legion Slack is accurate. I don't know what 90% it is, but 90% of it isn't. All right, let's get to the game. And I
want to
We've got two games, but
two,
I want
two very, very different games.
Two very different games, but I want to start with the Orlando game, because when we started off from a very low point off of Chicago, and I want to bring it to you, Caitlin, because you and I saw each other on the concourse before the Orlando game. And Caitlin, my dear friend, I have never seen you that downtrodden ever in history. Not on a podcast, not an event. You looked like a woman that was going to a funeral. You were not happy. I didn't even try to make a bad joke, which I usually do. I don't want to talk about that because we were all there with you. I want to know, at what moment did you think to yourself during that Orlando game, holy hell, we might win this game?
That's a very interesting question, Tom, because so I actually didn't see the second goal. Mm-hmm. We had walked over or back to the club, the Fifth Third Club, I had gotten hot chocolate because it was a little chilly. So I was walking back, and it was actually, Tom, we kind of ran into each other at that bar kind of over that same area, literally, when I just heard this eruption from the crowd. And like, I didn't see the goal, but I heard the crowd, and I was like, that's, I think they just tied it up. And I just like jumping up and down on the concourse. And I was like, is this happening? You know, I didn't know what to think because started out very, very low. I was dreading this. I was dreading the game on Friday. I'll just be honest, but it had to have been the second goal that tied it all up that made me think, oh, wow, this could be something. I don't know.
See, that's funny because I had the exact opposite experience. I had a really weird watching experience for this game. So I started it in the Estopinal End with Michael and Shannon Sheehy. I hadn't seen them for a while. They're two Legion members, two friends. And so the penalty happened and I'm like, crap, I'm the pool reporter. So if there's any questions about this, like I need to go up and like get ready to submit a question because it has to be handwritten on paper to the media people so it can be given to the refs in their locker room after the game. And so I get upstairs and then I look at the screen, it's 2-0, and I'm like, wait, what the heck happened? I was like, what? Because I couldn't even hear it in the elevator. It was like so dead, I guess, during when Orlando got that second goal like minutes later. So in the time to walk from where I was in the Estopinal End to go up the elevator to the press box, that happened, and I was like, crap. And then when the two actual goals happened, I was having a very subdued conversation with Vice President of Communications, Jonathan Lintner. And I cheered a little bit for the first goal that Racing scored and was told, you don't cheer in the press box. And then they were like, oh, just cheer. You're not supposed to cheer in the press box. So I had to like stand there silently, like, golly gee, this is nice. During all of this, I mean, I still clapped. I golf clapped. I couldn't help it. But yeah, it was wild. It was a very weird experience, but it was magnificent in the end.
Have you guys seen that meme that it's like, call an ambulance, but not for me? That was Racing. That was Racing this game.
Yes,
I mean,
that was Racing.
Very, very much like those first two goals. I was like, oh, here we go. Yep, I've seen this before. And I don't like how it ends.
But I'm so proud of the team, though, because
yes,
they did not get shaken by those. They were just like, nope, this is our house. We're angry. We can beat this team, and we're going to beat the same team. And like their energy did not dip at all. They did not get rattled. You know, I thought that they were the most rattled in the first 10, 15 minutes of the game when they just like had no possession and couldn't get into it. And then like the two goals happened and then they're like, and now we're angry.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, once they got their first goal, like Orlando was very much on the back foot. Mm-hmm. Yeah, they had some chances, but you could tell, like, we shook them. We shook them pretty badly. They thought that they had this game put away. And then, mm-hmm. you know, the penalty, I think, kind of rocked them a little bit. It was such a stupid penalty. Both the penalties were such stupid penalties.
See, it was bizarre because it all of a sudden, like, no one in the stadium knew what was going on. Like, the foul, it was... like barely, no one was even calling for there to be a penalty or anything. The ref was just like, oh.
It was weird. And it happened right in front of me, but it happened so fast. And like, it looked live, like Almer kicked the ball. Mm-hmm. But when they did show the replays, and they can't show the replays during VAR in the stadium, it's league protocol.
Oh my gosh.
Because they don't want the crowd to sway the ref. But so like in the stadium, we're like, we have no idea what happened, because it looked like, you know, maybe Marta tripped or something. And to me, it actually didn't look like it was in the box. But again, that was just a bad angle that I couldn't quite tell where she was. But on replay, I mean, it's very clear that Almer kicked Marta's planted foot out from under her and then kicked her foot into the ball. So Marta ended up kicking the ball because her foot got kicked. So I mean, it was definitely a penalty in review, but like, I cannot stress to you how much in the stadium, especially from like the angle that I was at, like, we had no idea. And the players were so confused too. Like, as soon as it was called for, like, or he even went to the box for review, like Abby and Carson and Katie, like their faces were like literally like, what the F? And mm-hmm. everybody like went over to talk to him, because like they could not figure out what had actually happened. But yes, on review, when you actually look at it, it was the right call, but it was so frustrating in the stadium.
What I was really impressed with about the team is that for the first 40 minutes, not only were they on the back foot, but they were mad at the ref.
Oh,
and
oh,
Caitlin has a great story about that.
And the ref was bad. I mean, the ref was bad. The ref was bad both ways. What bothered me was that Racing got out of their game. They were playing to get a call, and they weren't advancing the ball in any kind of coherent possession. They didn't have any strategy. It seemed as though the players were playing to say, I'm going to make the ref get a call, give me a call. And if I don't get it, I'm going to be mad at the ref, and that's going to feed into me being mad that this is why we're losing the game. Bad officiating happens. Like, it happens in every sport. It happens, you know, in a lot of games, and good teams fight through the bad refs. You complain, you try to influence the ref, you get in their face, you get in their ear, all that gamesmanship is true. But what worried me in that game for the first 40 minutes was, I'm like, this isn't Racing football. Like, this is Racing getting mad and trying to get calls, Racing versus the refs. Well, Racing needs to be playing Orlando.
But I think that was a reaction. Yeah, that was a reaction to, I think it was desperation also.
I don't think they were playing for calls. I think that they were playing, and it was a really physical game, because both teams really needed those 3 points. And so everybody was just fouling the heck out of each other and knocking each other down and pulling each other down. Like, I truly did not get that impression from Racing. I thought they were just kind of sloppy and angry. I don't think they were trying to influence the refs.
I would say that on my end of the stadium, where Racing would, you know, there were a few offensive moves. And I'm not going to call out players. I'm not going to say, like, oh, look at 28th minute or whatever, where I would see a player and I thought, man, 2 weeks ago, she's cutting it in off her foot and sending a cross across, sending a cross, not just across. But instead going down with minimal contact. And the moral, the happy ending to the story is that after they got that penalty, they stopped playing like that. They stopped saying, oh, I'm mad at the refs. First of all, they had every right to be mad at the refs. The refs were bad. But also, you've got to play through it. And when they started to play through it, they started having great results, and Orlando couldn't match them. They couldn't match their energy, couldn't match their what they were doing there on the ball, and it ended up well for them.
I mean, I disagree. I just don't think they played well. I don't think that they were playing to influence the game in any way. I just think they played poorly in the first 40 minutes and were angry. And then their anger actually drove them to be more effective and throw Orlando off. And then Orlando was then on the back foot. So I don't know. I definitely didn't get any sense that they were playing for calls. But they were angry though.
I mean, to be fair, there's a smart way to draw a call during a foul, and
which every team has always done in recent.
That's a really good point, Caitlin.
Which, Tom, you won't name names, but I mean, Sav does it all the time, and she gets penalties for us by doing that because she's smart. So, there might have been some of that, but look at the PK.
That's where I was getting, Sav gets penalties because she gets fouled when she is dangerous. What got me was I saw, and maybe I was wrong. I'm just giving my opinion. I saw players make moves that they don't normally make. Make moves that I thought were counterproductive because they were hoping to get a call rather than forcing Orlando to stop them with foul. But like I said, that's neither here nor there at this point. I mean, they ended up playing well. They ended up first of all, that penalty was fantastic. It was absolutely a penalty. But the fact that in the 44th, 45th minute that Racing was still fighting to try and get that last minute goal before halftime, and that shows that was a moment where a team it would have been very easy for Racing to say, all right, we're going to go into halftime. But I loved the urgency that they tried to fight and say, there's still 30 seconds left on the clock. There's still 15 seconds left on this clock. The ref hasn't blown the whistle. We are going to try and get a goal. And it paid off.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree with you. And this team historically plays their best when the stakes are like removed, when they're already out of playoff contention or there's just no chance, whatever. That's not the case now. I mean, it was very much, do or die. We're either going to win this game or keep our playoff chances on life support or we're not. And our last game of the season will be next week. And I don't know why this team chooses to show up when they do. I wish I knew. but I just hope they do it more.
Let's get it out of the way. I want to talk about Chicago before we get too much further along in the Orlando game, because we kind of talked about the stuff that we didn't like in Orlando, what went wrong in the beginning. Before we like really can enjoy ourselves talking about the positives, like we need to address Chicago, because that game was a mess. And like Caitlin, you're saying like you don't know when they show up and when they don't and what causes them to show up and what causes them not to. I mean, they arguably showed up in Chicago and every call just went against them to an atrocious degree. In retrospect, I do think that it was correct that St. George's was not offside, and so that their goal should have stayed. But I don't think there's any question that Sav was fouled in the box and that should have been a penalty. And the fact that it took so long for the ref to review it, it's supposed to only be overturned an on-field call if it's clear and obvious. And I'm sorry, if you're spending 5 minutes at the screen, that's not clear and obvious. So that alone should have made it ridiculous. But like, I mean, don't you think that, they did show up in that game, but like they were screwed over. Like, let's be real. I try to be like, oh, sometimes calls go your way, sometimes they don't. But like, no, Racing got screwed in that game. We should have at least 1 point from that game.
Yeah, I'm with you. I don't like to, put any blame on the refs, but there was a very obvious penalty that was not called as such. And hypothetically, we could have made that penalty and tied it up. I'm not saying we should have won that game, but it was just a failure of VAR on a, you know, we were just the team that that kind of got screwed by it this time around. I feel like every team, you love VAR when it's for you and you hate it when it's against you. And yeah, VAR, you know, NWSL refs, VAR, you can't be doing that. You cannot be screwing over teams in the playoff race. It's so important right now to get these things right, and they're just not doing it. So I think another issue was they didn't have the correct angle that they needed to see, you know, whether it was who got contact or with the ball first or whatever it was. So that's another issue. But anyway, yeah,
that's actually something that Michael Shaw has always been saying from the very beginning was going to be a problem in this league with VAR. Like, oh, you're excited about it now, but it's really going to screw people over at times. And it has, and it hasn't just been us. I mean, the league, you need to invest more. You need to invest in more camera angles to make these games, you know, able to be officiated properly.
Yeah, I agree.
Caitlin, though, I love what you said, though, that it was just us this time around. Because, yes, I mean, do I think that the officials cost us a couple points in Chicago? Yes, I do. But there's an element, well, the narrative that I do not accept is that because of this bad call, because of this bad officiating, that the NWSL is a Mickey Mouse league. Because in anticipation of this discussion, I did a quick Google search about VAR mistakes, and my computer exploded.
Because, there was just a really big one in the Premier League last week.
I mean, it's every single league, this happens. It always sucks. The NWSL is not immune. We got it this time. And, like, I can't think of any, but I'm guessing that if we, you know, talk to the Gotham City FC, shout out to you, Becky, or San Diego Wave, announcers, they'd be like, oh, Racing, you got it. I mean, it happens. I mean, and that is why, so we talked about it, but Becky, I'm going to steer back to Orlando, and that is why I loved this comeback, because what bad teams do is when the officials go against them, in their minds, they say, well, it's just not our game. We're just not going to do it tonight. But what Racing did against Orlando, when the officials were against them, was put the foot on the gas and get three goals. And Caitlin, you had mentioned in our text chat that you were a witness to a pretty awesome spectacle that may have lit the fire behind that three goal extravaganza from Racing. What did you see on the sideline?
Yeah, I was sitting in down in the club seats with Michael Shaw. Shout out to Michael and Elizabeth. Thank you for the tickets. And so that's right by the player bench. So the Racing player bench. And during an injury break or something, I don't know what it was, but all the players.
It was during Madrill's injury break.
Yes. Interestingly enough, during when Emily Madrill got her face bashed in. I don't know. Looked rough. Anyway, but, you know, they were coming over to the sideline to regroup, and one Abby Erceg came over and voiced her displeasure to the ref. She, like, we could all hear it. She was just telling the ref, you know, you need to watch out because the center ref over here, he's not seeing. And I don't usually curse on Butchertown Rundown, but she said he's not seeing shit, so you need to, you know, take care of that. And the entire section around me, everyone cheered because Abby was saying what we were all thinking. And I really do think that, you know, just like lit the fire, like you said, Tom, and just that's the kind of leader that you need, right? And we have that in Abby, and I think we have that in Jalen, although, you know, she's been sidelined, but that's what we need. That's the energy we need. And yeah, I was a little taken aback and surprised, but I was also like, you know what, Abby, you're right. You tell him, Abby. So I loved that.
Yeah, one thing that I also thought was cool during that, I'm pretty sure it was that break, maybe it was another one, but Jalen, even though she was on the sidelines warming up and everything, she would go over and she'd talk to Taylor Allmer, who was playing in the sixth role. And you could tell she's like kind of coaching her. She's like giving her some advice. Mm-hmm. And, you know, that's exactly what you want to see from your captain. You know, she can't be on the field, but she's still trying to, you know, help out in any way she can and push this team to success. So I thought that was cool. I mean, I think that we are so lucky to have the duo of Jalen and Abby leading this team. And I mean, like, thank God we have Abby with Jalen being injured
as much. Yeah, absolutely.
So that's been huge. I was so like, I thought getting the penalty was really smart on Sav's behalf, because yeah, she was going to be, I mean, there's no question about it. She was going and trying to draw a penalty. I think she was just as much trying to go and cross. And if she had successfully gotten past Messiah Bright, she would have been in perfect position to shoot. So I don't think it was just to draw the penalty, but I think that she knew that if I try and run across in front of her because I'm faster than her, she'll have no choice but to take me down. Like, it'll be hard for her to toe poke me, or she will just let me go because she doesn't want to risk a penalty, and then I'll have a much clearer shot. So, I mean, that was really smart thinking.
And that's what I call the Savannah DeMello dilemma that opposing teams have. They're like, do we foul her? Do we not? If we don't foul her, we're not going to stop her. So that's exactly it.
Exactly. Yeah. I mean, so like, she knew exactly how to put her in position that she was going to, it was a win-win situation for her. And that is such smart thinking. That is such high soccer IQ that, like, you know, Sav has been shaky in recent games since she came back from the World Cup. And I think she looked better in Chicago. And then she looked so much more like her old self in this most recent Orlando game. And it took her a little bit to get into it, but once she got into it, I mean, she was like, okay, there's Sav. There's the Sav that we know and love and have been missing. Mm-hmm. And drawing that penalty was so smart, because Messiah Bright could not stop herself. I mean, she's a rookie. I think that she just so instinctually still, you know, just went out and tried to poke the ball away, knock it away, and then just took Sav down. And I mean, who wouldn't do that instinctually? So, you know, drew the penalty, got Racing at least back in the game before the half. But to me, you know, and Nadia converted a really good goal. But to me, the game really changed they've been doing it at a weird time. It was like the 56th minute when they subbed in Maddie Picorni and Kirsten Davis. Mm-hmm. And then Davis and Tembi, they just have great chemistry. And Davis knows exactly how to time her runs to Tembi's runs. Yeah. And Carson sent in that perfectly weighted pass that got right in front of Tembi. And then Tembi got a perfectly weighted pass over the sliding leg of Emily Madrill. And then Davis slid to poke it in the goal. I mean, that was like the ruthlessness. And like, I'm getting this effing goal that we have been waiting to see. There was no hesitation. There was no extra touch. It was just, nope, going for it. And they put it right in the back of the net. You know, we've had some beautiful goals. We had Ari's absolute banger in the first home game. We've had Sav's multiple outside the foot shots. But that was just such a satisfying, finally Racing is scoring in the run of play and not relying on a set piece or, you know, something like stopped play to maneuver. And finally, we scored on the counterattack. That second goal, that equalizer, I mean, that was game changing to me. And I felt like the whole energy of the game completely flipped on its head right after that moment.
Yeah, I agree with you. And another thing is when Kayla Fisher came in.
Oh, yeah.
And she and Picorni, they just bring this like chaotic energy, but it's good. It's good. It's like organized chaos to like get things moving. They shake it up. And that's what I love about watching them.
One thing I really loved about that Tembi and Kirsten Davis goal is that I think that Tembi has a lot of respect for Kirsten Davis, that she can run with her. Mm-hmm. So many times we see Tembi, you'd take and carry the ball down the field and nobody can catch her and nobody can get in front of her, but she takes that one too many touches at the box trying to get the goal herself, which, of course, because there is no one else there. But Kirsten has the physical ability to run with her, to be a good target for her. And they're starting to realize, like Temby realizes, like, I can just put it across. The best goal chance is for me to get it to Kirsten. And I think for Kirsten, she works so well with Temby because I love her, and we can talk about this here in a second, but I love her as a second half sub where her energy and her physicality is just fantastic against tired legs. And when Temby is coming down the flank and Kirsten is coming down the middle and you have a center back who is probably not as fast and definitely more tired, it just causes so many problems, so many decision points for that center back, for the goalie. It puts Racing in a incredibly advantageous position that, I mean, it's what we've been waiting for with Temby. It's what we've been waiting for with Kirsten on the counterattack, on any kind of attack, for the last few months with them together.
I mean, I think that she is incredibly effective off the bench. I think they're both incredibly effective off the bench, but I think that both of them should be starting. And I think Davis needs to start in the center. I think one reason we have not played well in previous games is that we played Davis on the left. We played Davis on the right, subbed her in the center. She is at her best as a central striker, as a maneuverable center striker who's able to make runs. I love Nadia. Nadia is a superstar for a reason. The goal in Chicago that was given up was a giveaway by Nadia. The goal in the run of play that was given up in Orlando was given up by Nadia. She is just not as fast as she used to be. And she's getting the ball stripped from her. And that has seriously affected us and cost us. And she's just not fast enough. And so much of what we try and do when she's on the pitch is just have her kind of sit in front of the box like an old school nine and then serve the ball to her and then expect her to get it in. But everybody knows that we're going to do that. So everybody just guards the hell out of Nadia. And so we're just sending crosses into traffic that go nowhere. The reason we did well on the counterattack is because they could not keep up with Temby and Kirsten Davis. That there's no way that goal would have happened if Nadia was on the pitch because she would have not been able to make that run. She would have already been standing there and then all the defenders would already be around there, her. And then when Temby sent the ball in, it would have gone into traffic. I mean, maybe they could have done it. Maybe they could have connected. It's possible, but it has not been working. And this game, even though, yes, Kirsten was even more effective because she was going against tired legs. If she doesn't start in the San Diego game in the center with Paige on one side and Temby on the other, I'm going to flip and I'm going to throw my back out when I try and do this flip because I'm old and not physically capable of doing it, but it is going to drive me to do it because I just think Nadia not being as fast and as fast, that's much less apparent when you're going against tired legs. I think she would be more effective on the pitch, period, if she was coming in later as a super sub. And I know she probably doesn't want to be a super sub. And, you know, she's historically such an incredible striker. I mean, she's famous, world famous
for
a reason.
I'm going to cut you off for just a second. And I'm going to give my disclaimer that, I am such a Nadia Nadim fanboy. I think that she is, I think that planet Earth is such a better place with her on it. And when I said in a previous podcast that I believe that she proves that evolution is possible because she is better than everybody else, that I also believe. I will also say that she is not ready to contribute to a playoff drive team. When she has played well in the last few games or when she's played well, I feel as though because the defenders that are going against her are equally deferential. She has a mistouch. It's all right. This is Nadia. Like, this is a superstar. This is a wonderful humanitarian. But now that we are in, everybody we play is in a playoff hunt, she gets, you know, no quarter given. And every bad touch is being exploited. Here's my question for the both of you. Because I will agree that Kirsten Davis is a better, like a better nine option than Nadia. Well, I also think, and this is just for the purpose of discussion, talk amongst yourselves. Don't talk amongst yourself. Talk loudly because this is a podcast. Nadia kind of reminds me of Ellie in that she is a player that needs to at her peak effectiveness, needs to start in that. Not as fast. You put her in an 80th minute and it takes her too long to get up to game speed, already not as quick. So she is a liability regardless, because you need to start her when the game is slow. So I don't think that I don't think that Nadia as a super sub is effective because she takes too long to warm up into a game. My opinion. So, I mean, if you start Nadia, you get the best of Nadia, and then you can get a very effective Kirsten Davis, or you start Kirsten Davis, who Kirsten gets tired legs, or if she is, you know, conserving her energy, she doesn't get it. And then you don't have that player that you can bring off the bench where you're like, yes, goal is coming, because that's what happened. You put Kirsten Davis in Orlando, we got a goal. I mean, she is incredibly effective in that role. I don't know. Like, I'm torn.
I don't think you can say you're getting the best of Nadia when she starts, when she gave up two goals in two games.
Yeah.
And I think that in earlier games when she was coming back from injury earlier in the season, she was more effective as a super sub. Maybe I think so. She was more effective coming in later. I don't think she is effective enough. I don't think she's given us hardly anything to justify her starting. I mean, you're saying she's effective as if she scored any goals for us outside of that penalty that was drawn by DeMello. Mm-hmm. She hasn't. She hasn't scored a single goal for us this year. And I mean, I'm not saying this like, oh, she's a failure. I mean, she's on her way to being 36 and is coming back from double ACL tears. We should not be leaning on her this hard. Mm-hmm. And I don't think that she has come back to earn the right to start just for being Nadia Nadim. I think we're finally seeing Davis play at the level we have wanted Davis to play, with a heads up play to, you know, poach that ball against OL Reign, and then to make this sliding shot to get the goal in this game, that I think we're doing a disservice to the team to not play our hottest nine when our nine is actually heating up the way we've wanted her to all season.
Yeah, I think I agree with you, Becky. I don't, to me, you have to earn your starting spot. I haven't seen where Nadia has earned her spot. Now, I think that all comes back to our depth issue, right? We don't have the depth of that position. So, you know, we have to play someone. Does it have to be Nadia? Why? Just what's a good reason? I would love to hear Kim's reasoning for this, because I just logically, I don't see how she's the best choice that we have at that position.
I mean, Kim ranks players, I think it's very apparent, by talent, and always puts the players that he thinks are the best players on the pitch, no matter what, even if they're out of position. And that's why Davis has been bounced around until she stopped starting, because shockingly, she was not as effective played out of position. Whoa, it's funny how that happens. And I mean, I do think that, yes, she can play as a winger if she absolutely has to, but she is just so much better centrally. And I just don't think Kim plays with or ranks chemistry as high. And I think Davis and Katlana have better chemistry. I think Paige and Davis have better chemistry. Mm-hmm. I think, you know, and then the other weird thing he did is that he swapped Paige and Tembi. And like, yes, you know, they played on opposite sides than they typically do. And that I think really affected Paige, who I think mm-hmm. has excellent chemistry with Carson. But it did provide the good chemistry between Tembi and Carson. So I think that was more of a wash. But again, I mean, I don't understand how he must have seen something that I don't understand about how Orlando lines up and how their forwards work to think that or how their defenders work to think that was better. And ultimately we won the game. So maybe that was smart, but we have not had the same front line for like four games. And I can't feel like that's not hurting the chemistry and the coherence of this team.
I mean, that's the problem we had with our defense last year. We didn't have the same exactly. back line. And look what happened when we changed that.
And I mean, the midfield has had to be rotated because of injuries and suspensions and stuff like that. So, I mean, that just happens. But like the front line has not. We've just been, you know, you can over fidget with something, you know, mm-hmm. you can like overwork something to death by trying too many things. And I don't think we've ever just said, okay, you know, you are who we are going with. We trust you. We back you. Go for it. And I think that affects the team's confidence. And, you know, like they're seeing stuff in practice that we're not seeing. I mean, maybe they've needed to do some of these changes. I mean, I don't think they're just being done willy-nilly, but I mean, I think that this constant fidgeting has affected the effectiveness of this team. And I hope that, you know, we can go back to the front line that was the most effective for us when we were winning the most in the middle of the year, which was Paige on the left, Hurston in the center, and Tembi on the right.
Mm-hmm. Well, this
team, or Wong when Wong's back.
This team has minimally or at most one more game to fidget. So I'll ask you both, what do you want to see? And earlier in the starting line, Becky, you said if Racing loses, gets a draw out of the playoffs, win, need help. But what they have in their control is to try and win in San Diego. Caitlin, I'll go to you. What do you want to see in this next game against San Diego? Against San Diego Wave.
Yes, San Diego Wave. Gosh, I'm going to go with what Becky said. Like, we need a consistent, we need that consistent front line. And I actually think are we going to have everyone back for this game, Becky? Do you know?
I mean, I thought that they were going to have more people back this game and we didn't, but I truly think that they're pretty confident that everybody should be
okay,
back.
So
with the exception of Baggett, who I think is done for the season.
Okay. But like, Jalen, are we going to have Jalen back? Ari, hopefully.
I don't know if Jalen will start. I mean, I certainly hope she starts because mm-hmm. I think they should have given her some minutes in this game. I mean,
she wanted those minutes
to hold on to.
Like,
I think
interrupt?
I can understand why they're.
I mean, I'm
to
sorry. Can I interrupt with a rant?
Like, sure. What are you going to say?
Like, what are you saying? Like, no, Benson, no. But like, it makes me so mad that Jalen did not play this last game, because if she is hurt, she should have been on the concourse with the other injured players by the press box watching the game. If she is hurt, she should not be warming up in her uniform. She should be out. But if she is available, then when you are up 3-2 in a freaking must-win game, you put her in. You put in your defensive stopper, your best defensive player. You put her in to put the game away against Orlando. Okay, they won anyway. Fantastic. I'm happy. I'm thrilled. But why'd you not put Jalen Howell in when you need to hold a lead, when you need to win a game in a must-win game. If she's available, you put her in. If she's not available, you leave her out, because that was the perfect situation to say, Jay, you got 10 minutes. Try not to get thrown out on a red card. Other than that, go and wreak havoc. Because
honestly, it looked like she was going to come in a few times. She, like you said, she was warming up. At one point, she even, like, she had her shin guards in her hand and she put them on. So it looked like she was going to, it looked like it was going to happen.
Yeah.
But I don't know why.
And don't tell me, like, oh, we're taking Tembi. No, take Tembi out. Put Jay in and just let Jay run around and disrupt things. That is, like, she's your captain. It makes me very angry that, like, if she's not available, fine. Put her out.
Even just to get her prepped for San Diego, I mean, put her in for 5 minutes just to get her the sense of being back on the field. I mean, in the game, Almer, despite, like, the initial penalty, really played herself back into the game well and did really well at the end and was really effective. But I agree. I mean, I don't see why we needed to take Almer or Pokorny, who came in for Ellie, out. Like, we could have taken one of the forwards out and put in another defensive player to hold on to the lead. Would that have thrown out the formation? I don't know. That's against, like, the philosophy of the team. Blah, 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 blah. I don't care. Like, it was more important for Jaylen, for who she is, to get her on the field and get her some minutes. I mean, even for her morale. I mean, like you said, Caitlin, she was very much expecting to come to that game. And I saw her briefly afterwards. And, like, I don't know her, like, personally beyond, like, the interviews we've done, but she looked really bummed to me. I think she was very, very disappointed that she did not get minutes that she was actively expecting. And I think that that's not great. And I also don't think it's great to have her miss, like, a month and a half of games, and then, I'm assuming, just start in San Diego out of the blue.
Exactly.
And I
that's
also don't think it's good not to start her in San Diego, but I can't, I don't know. I think that they could have found a way to get Jay in for a handful of minutes to get some experience. I agree 100%, Tom.
That bothers me so much because, and full disclosure, Jay Howell is my favorite player. Like, I love her. I love watching her play. I watch her, the way she's on the field. I love her physicality. Favorite player. Okay, I've said that. There is not a player in this league that comes into a game after a month, month and a half off, and is effective. If she plays minutes against San Diego, and she is one of their best players, if she is healthy, she should play against San Diego Wave. She's not going to, it's going to take her time to mentally acclimate, physically acclimate. You know what? This team doesn't have 10 minutes of game time for Jay Howell to get into the game. Like, and that's not a criticism of Jay. That's saying that every player that's been off for a while takes a while to get ready to play, to be ready for game speed. But if you're putting her on the bench, get her in the GD game, because this team is better when she's on the field.
The only thing I can even logic out, and I've thought about this a lot because it really annoyed me, is that she is on yellow card accumulation watch. I wonder that at the end of that Orlando game that was so physical, that they were afraid that she was going to go in, get a yellow, and be suspended from San Diego and get an automatic red. But I don't know. I don't know. I mean, it's...
That's a pretty big... That I can see where you're coming
but
from.
It's clear that the plan had been to bring her in anyway, though.
Exactly.
I mean, like you said, she had her shin guards. They went and talked to her a few times. Like, she was warming up with the energy of someone that was getting herself ready because she was expecting to go into that game. And I don't think she would have done that, because we've seen her on the bench for the Challenge Cup OL Reign game, and she, like, did not warm up that aggressively when they showed it, like, on the sidelines. You know, like,
I'm sorry to
she
get,
never
I'm
got
sorry
up and was doing
that.
Stretches or anything like that to the extent that she was in this game, because you can see it on the periphery of the field while you're watching the game. So, like, I don't know. I don't know. That annoyed me. I think that I'm afraid now they're not going to start her in San Diego, and I just, against, like, Jaden Shaw and again, or Yeah, Jaden Shaw and
Alex Morgan.
And Alex Morgan. I mean, I think that we needed as prepared a Jalen Howell as we could possibly have. So yeah. We can get Ellie back next to Abby, where she's been.
Yeah. Well, you know, that's what I kind of hope happens. You're saying she won't be prepared. Well,
I think they're going to start her no matter what. I do.
Yeah. At this point, it's you know, go big or go home, literally.
Yeah.
So why not? I mean, why not throw her in there? Even Jay Howell at 50% is better than a lot of people at, you know, 100%. Or I don't think she's 50%. I'm sorry. She's not 50%. She's, you know, better than that. She's not 100%, obviously, or she would have played by now. But yes, I would like to see some consistency in the lineup for this final game. Let's put our best players for this game out. Don't put your favorite players or your most talented players. Who do we need specifically to beat San Diego?
And who's what hot strengths? Now?
Yes. What strengths do we have to go against San Diego? And that's kind of all I've wanted from Kim this entire year is to play, you know, tactically, you know, roster wise, lineup wise, like just play players to their strengths. Don't play them out of position. So yeah, I just want some consistency in that front line. If we get to see Jalen again, cool. If Ellie can go back to center back, that'd be cool too. This final game, I don't want to have questions about what our players are doing because they're playing in a weird formation that I haven't seen before. So just some consistency, best players on the field. Let's go.
Yeah, I think that for me, and sorry to get like all aggro on that. Like I get so mad when Jay's not like, come on, you don't misuse your captain. I want to see a front line of Paige, Kirsten Davis, Temby, and I don't want to see Paige subbed off in the 54th minute. We've been taking her off early. She has shown that she's got the stamina to continue to press. I feel as though that is a, you know, we all love Pokorny. Like, I love Pokorny. We all love Pokorny. Katie Sharp, St. Louis girl, loves all St. Louis girls. Pokorny is one. But the reason you play Pokorny, who is a fantastic player and who I hope we extend, the reason you play Pokorny is so that you conserve minutes so that in a must-win game, which this is, Paige can go 80 or 90. So that Temby can go 80 or 90. And I want to see that. And also, and this is as much as I worry about what the NWSL has taught me is that players coming off injury, players who have not had regular minutes in the league get swallowed up. So I worry when we talk about starting Jay, giving Ari big minutes, because it's going to take time for them to get up to game speed.
I'm not that worried about Ari acclimating. I mean, yeah, sure, it's going to take a couple of minutes because she's been playing for Brazil.
Good point.
And only has missed two games now. You know, it's really Jalen acclimating that I'm most worried about because she's been out for so long and I'm afraid she's going to come in and want to do so much that she's going to do a disservice to herself just because she's going to try and want to be everything for everyone all the time. And she's going to need to settle into the game and be like, okay, I know exactly what I'm supposed to do. This feels right. I mean, again, thank God for Abby, because I think Abby is a very good person to be like, go here, do this. And I don't think Jay needs that much, but like a reminder, like everybody, this is where you're supposed to be.
Well, I think it's good that she has such respect for Abby so that if an Abby says that, it won't be somebody that she's like, what? I know what I'm doing. It'll be like, okay, I'm going to listen to this. I'm going to appreciate what you're saying and take it to heart, which is another thing that Abby's leadership has brought to this team.
But I also agree what you said earlier about Paige. I mean, Paige has been kind of hot and cold at times, but it really drove me nuts when she was taken out in the Chicago game, even though I do think that like after the subs they did a little better, for a variety of reasons. I think some of that was Chicago. I don't think that was all us. But like Paige had been winning the ball, or at least like disrupting Chicago's movement of the ball, like really deep in their final third. And I thought it was pretty successfully stymieing them on that flank. Did she generate that many chances? No. I mean, she did some, but she was pressing better than many other players on the field against Chicago, at least initially. And so when they took her off, I was actually kind of frustrated. And I think that in the last game, she wasn't very effective, but we were also playing her on the right, and she does so well with Carson specifically. Like, they just know what the other one's doing. I mean, we've seen so often, you know, like, Abby sends the ball forward, knows exactly where Carson is, then Carson sends the ball forward because she knows exactly where Paige is going to be running. And so, I mean, again, like, I really want to see Paige. I really want to see her played through and not subbed in the 56th minute, but, like, I want to see her on the left. I want to see her with Carson because I think Tembi has shown she can also do well on the right, especially if Ari's going to be over there. So, like, yes, can we just go to the lineup that was effective and won us games earlier? Like, I don't understand. I mean, I know injuries have affected that, and of course, you know how people perform in practice and everything affects that. We don't see the whole picture, but like, let's just play everybody where they're the most comfortable. Like, that needs to be something that is given some priority. And I hope that we're able to do it and really truly put out our best team. I hope we all agree on what is the best team and that it comes out and is successful against San Diego. And, you know, we might think like, oh, San Diego, they already clinched a spot. They don't have that much to fight for. No, they're still fighting for the shield because they drew North Carolina yesterday. So they have a lot to fight for. They want to get the shield for the first time.
Big game for Racing against San Diego Wave. Big games that we've just come across. And when they're big games, and they're all big games, you think, I want to listen to my favorite Spotify playlist, which is the Mint Mix. Caitlin, what are we adding to the Mint Mix this week?
This week, first song is Living on a Prayer by Bon Jovi.
Good song.
Racing is definitely living on a prayer. They're halfway there. Whoa, living on a prayer for this upcoming game against San Diego. Next song after that, continuing on the same theme, All I Need is a Miracle by Mike and the Mechanics.
Yes.
We do kind of need a miracle at this point. Not quite a miracle, but we need lots of things to fall into place. So, and then finally, the last song I have is, since it's the final game of the regular season, I have The Final Countdown.
Oh, I was going to suggest that if you didn't select it. So wow. Awesome.
Yes. Great minds, Becky. That one speaks for itself. So yeah, that's it for this week's edition of the Mint Mix. I will definitely make sure to add those this time.
When my niece was like 4, she thought The Final Countdown was like the most badass song in the world. So she would like listen to it and like rock out. So that is like always my association with it. Like, I mean, like full on like head banging and like little tiny like frilly dresses. It was hysterical. And
she has good taste.
Yeah, she has great taste. Yeah. Yeah. And she's now a varsity soccer player in her team and playing for one of the top club teams in the area. So it's also fitting. So
yeah. Awesome.
Well, so the big takeaway from this podcast is that if you have a young child who you want to be an aspiring soccer star, play them The Final Countdown during their formative years.
Play them the full Mint Mix. Get them pumped up. That's right.
All 3.5 hours of it, guys.
Hey, start it when they're in their cradle. Just blast it into their crib.
That's right. It's what Tiger Woods' dad would have done.
Just get them into the Mint Mix right away.
Y'all, we have a big game coming up. This was fun. Let's do it again.
Let's do it.